This show is a proud member of the Pride 48 Podcasting Network. Check out other great podcasts at pride48.com/shows.
Welcome to the North and South of Things podcast, a show dedicated to discussion of topics important to the LGBT community and the community at large. Here are your hosts, Mark and George.
Hello, everyone. I am Mark here in St. Paul, and you've joined me today at the North and South of Things and all the way from the luscious and succulent peach tree state down in Georgia. It'd be George in Atlanta. Hello, George.
Good Sunday afternoon. How are you?
I am a little frazzled. It's been a kind of a busy morning. You know, I decided to make zucchini bread because we're going to be talking about kitchen roulette today. And I was up early to make sure that I had breakfast for the week.
Right.
And then I had a massage scheduled. And then an appointment with you to record. So
it has been a busy week and a week too.
Yeah. It has been really hard in the news lately with all of the events that have been happening. So we decided to lighten things up a little bit today because it's been far too serious. Wouldn't you agree?
I am ready for something not serious. That is correct.
Right. And as it is summertime and the bounty of the earth is starting to come forth. And I had a friend of mine ask me if I wanted to share what's called a community shared agriculture. Are you familiar with this, George?
Is that anything like a community garden?
Well, it's a community garden. It's usually somebody who's like a farmer who has a reasonable amount of space and can produce enough either fruits or vegetables.
Oh, I think I saw this on the Ina Garden show. It's almost like a co-op where like a bunch of people own.
Right.
Sort of lease for the summer.
Well, what we're doing is we ended up handing over $600 for the season. So it was $300 apiece. And we start to get weekly vegetables all summer long, starting, I think it started, I want to say in June. And we'll go through the fall until like the first frost.
Wow.
So, and it's an organic farm. So the produce that you get is really pretty high quality stuff. And one of the things that I'm learning is that you aren't exactly sure what you're going to get. You get an email in the beginning of the week, and it'll say, for example, this week, you'll have beets, you'll have Swiss chard, you'll have green onions, basil, broccoli, and zucchini. And then, there was also green beans in there and an Asian cucumber, which I've never seen before. Have you ever seen an Asian cucumber?
And I've heard of English hothouse cucumbers, but
sure,
I don't.
Right.
Is that close?
Well, no.
No, okay. Not even, George. Wait.
Basically, it is I would call it like a curlicue cucumber.
Huh.
It's a cucumber, you know, you have some length to it, but on the end, it kind of curls around the top.
I feel like I have seen those before. Yeah.
Right. You know, and I am learning about all of these odd things that I'm sure our grandparents would be familiar with and who have used. So I'm having a little trouble trying to find out about ways of kind of using this summer produce.
So what all have you received thus far?
Well, I think one of the strangest things I've had to work with is called garlic scapes.
Garlic scapes.
Okay. So on a garlic plant, when garlic is planted in the spring, of course, you know, the leaves come up and then it puts out a stalk and it curls around and then there's a bud of the flower, the flowering plant. Now, in order for the garlic to mature into a bulb, farmers need to cut this off. So the energy of the plant is going into the ground, into the bulb of the earth, rather than into the flower and kind of propagating, you know, the vegetable like normal.
Interesting.
So they have a very mild garlic flavor. And basically what you can do is you can, you know, cut them up and put them in salads. You can put them in sautés. And
what does the flower look like? What would it put you in mind of?
Well, it hasn't bloomed yet. Mm. So it's really tightly, it's just a bud.
Oh, it's a bud. Okay.
Yeah. So I haven't actually seen what a garlic flower looks like.
So do, and I feel like I have seen somebody cook with them on a show once, but so these would be like, you know, what, caper size or slightly bigger?
Well, it's like a long green onion, but it's curled in on itself there again.
Long green onion curled in. Oh, the bud itself or the stalk?
The stalk and the bud and the together.
Oh, weird. Yeah, that's odd.
And there's been a lot of greens. I have enjoyed probably about 3 to 5 pounds of spinach so far.
Mm.
And the nice thing about that is, you know, that cooks down. I'm sure you're very familiar in the South of the kind of the tradition of greens.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of taken a page out of your playbook, so to speak, and have been cooking them down, cooking them very much like collards.
Collards, uh-huh.
And so it's been kind of this creative culinary kick in the pants.
No doubt. Lots of challenges. Have you given thought to freezing any of it?
It's funny that you should mention that, because this week I got this huge bunch of fresh basil. And I'm like, what the heck
am
I going to do with all of this basil? Well, the Italians, bless their hearts, they have this thing called pesto.
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes.
So basically, I took all of this and I, you know, washed and cleaned the leaves and just plucked them, put them through my salad spinner to get them very dry. And then I put them in my food processor with some pine nuts.
Mm-hmm, and olive oil.
And olive oil. Mm-hmm. And
that's brilliant. Yeah.
And then I just put it in the freezer. And when you're freezing pesto, you want to make sure that you don't add your cheese at the time.
Oh. Okay.
Because otherwise it has a tendency to, you know, kind of go rancid in the freezer if you do that. So if you're making pesto, basically you go ahead and put your pine nuts in and your basil and olive oil. And then once you've pureed this into a sauce, you basically pour a little bit more olive oil on the top and pop it in the freezer. And then you have this throughout, you know, the winter months.
Now, how long will it keep in the freezer? I mean, is there a point at which it's just, is it indefinitely or is it?
I would say, you know, 3 to 6 months probably is a good kind of rule of thumb on, you know, on pesto.
There was a gentleman back in Virginia that introduced me to pesto back in the mid-90s. I don't think I had had it before then, but it's pretty magical stuff. I mean, you just mix it in with pasta, put it on, you know, a French baguette. I mean, there's so many different ways you can use it.
Yeah, one of my favorite meals is to get a baguette, and then you can grill it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, put pesto on it and serve up some olives and you know, antipasto, so to mm-hmm. speak, mm-hmm. And cheese and a nice bottle of Chianti, and voila, that's dinner.
Love it. I would imagine it would also be good just sort of maybe marinate a chicken breast in it and bake that off, or even grill it or something like that.
Absolutely. And I've had some pesto encrusted salmon, which is also good. So, you know, this has been creatively challenging. Mm. And one of the things that I've tried to work towards is making sure that I use all of this fresh produce before it goes bad. And that's been a real challenge for me as a single person to kind of, you know, basically cook what's here. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I made zucchini bread this morning is, you know, I had part of a zucchini that was left from last week and another one this week. And it was like, I have to use this. What can I, what
well,
can
yeah,
I do?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've paid for it. So, like, maybe breakfast. Maybe. I don't know.
That's right. We're sizzling now.
Sizzling now. Well, I mean, I have to ask. I think these cultural culinary challenges are fabulous and everything, but are you getting some basics here? Are you getting some tomatoes and regular cucumbers and things of that nature, or is it too early?
I've had a couple of regular cucumbers, and those are great. I just kind of slice them up, and they're a great addition to pretty much any meal. Mm-hmm. I've also had lettuce, too. So, you know, there's been a lot of salad. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that I'm liking salad more and more because ranch dressing. Mm-hmm. Because ranch dressing.
Because ranch dressing.
Really, you know, it makes everything.
It really does. The crowd is enjoying it. Oh, my God. I actually don't eat ranch dressing the way most of my southern cohorts do, which is usually just to drown everything in ranch dressing. But I do like just the tiniest bit to mm-hmm. just to give a little bit of dampness to the salad. It doesn't take much at all. But I just love a fresh salad in the summer. Just lettuce, tomato, cucumbers. And I tend to do a lot of baked boneless, skinless chicken breasts. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I'll bake two or three of those off at a time and have one for dinner, and one will be for a salad at lunch the next day. Yeah, I do love a fresh salad. But talk to me about tomatoes. You haven't said anything about tomatoes. Are you getting...
Well, it's still early for tomatoes here.
Okay.
Usually when you're planting tomatoes, you kind of want to wait. Mm-hmm. Until I, you know, a rule of thumb is, you know, like around Memorial Day. You don't want to put them in too early because we can and have in the past had frost warnings in May.
Yeah.
So
they probably plant them a little earlier here, but I can totally see that in the Minnesotas. Will you get any heirloom? Do you know what an heirloom tomato is?
Yeah, we have a lot of heirloom style of vegetables that, you know, if you go down to the farmer's market, especially, mm-hmm. you're going to run into a lot of them. My former employer, there was a guy there that they made a contest about growing tomatoes. And then come end of August, beginning of September, they would have a tomato festival. Mm. And everyone would bring in their best prize, you know, grown heirloom tomatoes, and we would judge who the winner was. But in the springtime, Kyle would bring in a bunch of plants, heirloom tomato plants, and just basically give them away to anybody who kind of wanted to give it a go. And I have black thumbs pretty much when it comes to gardening, but I did.
I find that hard to believe.
Indoor plants, you know, I have lemon trees that I have sprouted and that are growing with the rest of my house plants. But when it comes to anything outside, apparently I like to kill things.
Wow.
I don't know what it is. But the one plant variety that I planted that year was what's called a ghost white tomato.
I thought you were going to say ghost pepper, and I was going to have to just smack you.
No. We don't do that's toxic material,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah. You know. So a ghost white tomato.
Yes.
Wow.
So it you know, basically would have kind of this greenish hue, but as it matured, it turned white. And it had really robust tomato flavor, and I was really kind of surprised at that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was one of the better ones that I've grown.
Is this the product of genetic or what do they call it when you if it were animals it would be called breeding, but when you cross pollinate seeds or something like that and you come up with new hybrid things, is this like a hybrid or
no? It's an heirloom.
It's an heirloom. Wow.
It's a tomato that's been grown in the past. Mm. You know, the reason why we have the tomato that we have is because it's the tomato that will last getting it from the field to the store. Mm-hmm. And have the longest sort of shelf life.
And sometimes the most generic bland taste.
Yeah, especially in February.
Yeah.
In Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got you. I have to say the heirloom tomatoes, and I'm using that term very generally because it generally, here it means like this purple, almost purplish, or it can be yellow, but it has these big streaks of color in it. Mm-hmm. And but so clearly that's a more general term, and there's a lot of varieties that I'm not used to, but I'm now going to have to go somewhere and find myself an heirloom tomato and make myself hungry. How much food are you getting a week? Is this a bag? Like what?
It's about a grocery bag full.
Okay.
Every week.
So you've got some, can you ask for more?
I don't think so. Everyone, my friend normally picks up the share. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of like drop off points around the city, and she was out of town last weekend. So it was up to me to kind of collect things. And since she was out of town, she said, basically keep the whole thing. Because I'm not going to be able to get to
it. Oh, you guys split the 600 by 300, which means you have to split a bag.
No, there's two grocery bags.
Oh, two grocery bags. Okay.
Yeah, per week. And we basically, she'll send me the email saying, okay, here's what's possible in the share this week. And then she'll ask me, you know, is there anything you want? Or want all of, or want none of. And this week I told her to keep the lettuce.
Because, right.
Yeah.
All stocked up.
we had enough of that. So last week, one of the things that I received was this absolutely huge, beautiful head of Napa cabbage.
Mm. Okay.
And I'm like going, you know, and the week before that, I had a half a head of that. And
why is Napa cabbage? I mean, is it like the purple stuff?
No.
What is Napa cabbage?
A Napa cabbage is an Asian style of cabbage.
Okay.
And it kind of looks, the leaves are long and they curl up. It doesn't have a compact head on it, mm-hmm. like green cabbage or red cabbage. Mm-hmm. This is used a lot in stir fries for mm-hmm. Asian dishes and such. But, you know, what is a good German boy to do with a huge head of cabbage?
Kraut. Cabbage? Kraut.
That's right.
Kraut.
I yeah. made a fresh batch of Napa Valley cabbage sauerkraut.
Now, if the Danburys were asked that question, it would be what?
I have no idea. What would it be?
Kimchi.
Oh, yes. Right. I have a couple of recipes that I've got, you know, sitting in the dugout and in the bullpen that I might bring out. Just one of the things that I wanted to try is kimchi. But, you know, it's like Asian sauerkraut.
Mm-hmm. So what are you, I'm still trying to, I need to look up Napa cabbage. I don't know why this is I'm having a mental block, but I've clearly heard of it before.
And I'm sure you've seen it too in the supermarket.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So the process of fermenting cabbage and making sauerkraut is ridiculously easy.
It's like vinegar, salt, and water, right?
It's not even vinegar.
Oh, it's just salt and water.
It's salt and water.
Yeah.
And basically what I did is I sliced up the cabbage very fine into strips. Mm-hmm. And then use salt, just using, I use pickling salt. You can use kosher if you'd like. Mm-hmm. And you basically just salt the cabbage, let it sit for a while, and then it starts to release the moisture. And that becomes a brine. And I have a gallon container that I just put that in. And I let it, usually I pack it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I wait for about 24 hours.
Now, is this refrigerated or unrefrigerated?
It's unrefrigerated. It mm-hmm. was sitting on my kitchen counter. Mm-hmm. And so you give it about 24 hours or so, and then it's going to release a lot of water. And depending on how fresh the cabbage is, it will kind of depend on how much water is produced. So then you have to just make sure that you have enough brine to cover the shredded cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't quite have enough, so I just made some more brine, which is basically a quart of water and about a tablespoon and a half of salt. So what this does is that salty brine water kills any of the bad bacteria. And then I used some of that brine in a Ziploc bag, and then I just weighted it down within that gallon container. And then I took a dishcloth and just covered the top with a rubber band. So it's basically no foreign matter can get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I let it sit for 5 to 6 days.
So it's got to have air to do its fermenting, right?
Right.
And it can't, and refrigeration would kind of defeat the purpose because it needs to have the warmth too, right?
It needs to have that that yeast, the wild yeast, mm-hmm. to kind of ferment the cabbage.
So where does that come from? Where does the yeast come from?
It just the air. It's all over. Mm. It's everywhere, and you know, that's how things like beer were discovered. You know, somebody put out, you know, mashed grains in water, and suddenly, you know, it's bubbling away. And one of the byproducts in brewing, as you know, is alcohol.
Right. Right.
But you don't get very much of that when you're fermenting foods like sauerkraut, or if you wanted to do kombucha, which is a fermented tea.
What's it called?
Kombucha.
Bless you. I'm sorry, it's awful. You're going to have quite the bounty coming. I mean, like, it sounds like it's just starting to come in, but, like, when you get late summer, early fall, you're going to have, like, a crap ton of stuff, aren't you?
That's right. And my friend warned me. She said, you're going to have a lot of greens starting out, and then you are going to have, by the end of the summer, you're going to have a lot of potatoes.
Oh.
Now, I've never met a potato I haven't liked.
I hear you.
So I don't think there's going to be a problem there. However, there's going to be more cabbage coming down the pike. In the spring, you've got the Napa cabbage. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall, you have the more familiar green head of cabbage. Now, mm-hmm. I have my family's sauerkraut crock. That's 2 gallons. And basically, I should be okay. What I'll be able to do is later this fall, I'll make another batch of sauerkraut, but then I will can it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go ahead and process it in a hot water bath in sterilized canning jars, and then I'll have sauerkraut throughout the winter.
Do you have a basement?
I do have a basement, and I actually have a small room down there. It's, you know, where the plumbing stack is, mm-hmm. and it's very cool. And
because you can keep potatoes for a little bit longer if you can control the temperature, right?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I do have a basement, and I should be okay.
Awesome. What I'm trying to sit here and think about potatoes other than vodka. What all are you? What do you?
Well, there's hash browns. Yeah. There's boiled. There's mashed. There's roasted. You know, take your pick.
Yeah, but you can't. You don't can potatoes.
You can. I think potatoes are one of those vegetables that you actually need to pressure can them. There are some vegetables that aren't safely processed unless it's under pressure. Now, I don't have a pressure canner, but I'm sure I could scare up a friend who does.
Yeah, I remember those days. My grandmother, we used to break beans on her back porch in Tennessee and canned green beans, and I remember that whole pressure thing. And then some of it was not. It was very low tech. It was, mm-hmm. in fact, there was a, gosh, this would be mid-70s, perhaps, late-70s. I even remember once doing, it might have been pickles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was in a giant aluminum tub. Sit on a fire, or steel tub, sit on a fire outside.
Mm-hmm.
And like that way they were able to process this huge amount of these jars at one time. Yeah, I remember that. Well, Mark, we got about 2 more minutes. What are you most looking forward to in the bounty?
In the bounty, I think tomatoes, because it's such kind of a short season here, and mm-hmm. the problem with Minnesota, at least the last several years, it's been kind of wonky weather wise mm-hmm. so usually there are good tomato years and there are bad tomato years, and I think it's been a while since we've had a really good tomato year, so I'm looking forward to that. And then I'm also just kind of looking forward to using all those fresh local ingredients in different recipes that aren't exactly that I'm used to. I know I'm going to get more zucchini, so right now I'm looking at zucchini casserole recipes.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you mostly eating vegetarian right now, or are you mixing some proteins with these items?
Yeah, I am mixing some proteins, but I'm trying to do a lot more fish.
Mm-hmm.
So my local co-op actually has some really good seafood. So I've been getting sockeye salmon, Atlantic cod. They had these amazing shrimp 1 week from Texas that were just amazing. So, yeah, it's, even though we might be part of flyover country and stuck in the middle of the country, mm-hmm. we do have a lot of access to a lot of good food, and I'm very grateful for that because I know that isn't the case everywhere.
It's true. What an awesome idea. Well, folks, that's Mark's kitchen roulette. Look in your backyard and see if you've got one of these CSAs, community shared agriculture arrangements. I think I need to look into that myself. We don't have much farmland here in the city proper, but farmland is not that far away. So I need to look into that. That's kind of interesting. And sounds like a really good cost savings too.
Yeah. If you take $300 and you spread it over 4 months, mm-hmm. you know, that's 12 weeks. That's, you know, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah. I was told there would be no math on this show.
Yes, math is hard. Math is hard. Gritty.
All right, kids. Thanks for joining us, Mark. That's fascinating. Can't wait to hear what recipes we have to do an episode in the fall and check back in and see how you're using all these veggies.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks for listening, folks. We'll chat with you soon.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The North and South of Things. More information available at northandsouthofthings.com. Follow Mark on Twitter at Laughing Buddha. That's LaughingBuddha. And George at George in Atlanta. Our podcast theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.